Welcome to this week's edition of It's Good, featuring your host, Gary Smith.
What's up? Welcome back to the big show. Thanks for joining us again. Conference championship week in the NFL has come and gone, sending two more teams to the offseason, which brings the total to 30. Two teams remain, and there's only one real football game left in the NFL and in college until Labor Day. I'll tell you what, though, it's a pretty decent matchup we're looking at here in the Super Bowl. The Green Bay Packers face off against the Pittsburgh Steelers in Dallas for the Lombardi Trophy. Super Bowl 45. Green Bay is a 2.5-point favorite. It's the first time in several years that the favorite has been favored by less than 3 points. Just goes to show you what kind of a matchup we're looking at. And predominantly, I want to say 32 of the winners in the Super Bowl were favored in Vegas to win the big game as well. Here's the scenario for you. I posed this question to several people, and I just can't seem to I feel like the responses aren't, I don't know, they leave more to be desired. Here's the question. Your favorite team is in the Super Bowl. For me, it's the St. Louis Rams. They made it back to the Super Bowl. It's been years since they've been in. Your wife is pregnant. Your son is due to be born, or daughter is due to be born during the time the Super Bowl is. You have 50-yard line front row seats. Do you go to the Super Bowl, or are you there for the birth of your first child? One look at it is you don't want to miss the first one. Another look, and it's all about perspective, really. Another look is that if it's the first, then, hey, there'll be plenty more children that you could have later on. Just a question I've thrown out there. Everybody responds in their own way. Just an interesting scenario. Wonder what people would do. How about the AFC stranglehold on who's been going to the Super Bowl since 2003? It's been the Patriots, the Steelers, and the Colts, and that's it. Nobody else has gone to the Super Bowl. Once again, the Jets were knocked out. We'll delve into that game a little bit more later. And the last two opponents that the Steelers have faced in the Super Bowl that they knocked off, the Seahawks and the Cardinals, well, we see how their franchises have taken a turn downhill since then. But before we get to that, let's talk about the Bears and the Packers and what many people agree is the greatest rivalry in all of the NFL. On the sports blog, itsgoodwithgary.blogspot.com, we polled our readers, and they responded that this was the greatest rivalry in the NFL. Bears versus Packers, a chance to go to the Super Bowl, is on the line. Now, in most sports, or let's say in college football in particular, you're bound by conference bragging rights. Florida was beaten by Alabama in the SEC championship game last year, and so I pulled for Alabama in the national championship game. The question then is, do you think Bears fans can root for the Packers in the Super Bowl? Are they bound by that same, I don't know, set of guidelines? Would Packers fans root for the Bears if they were playing in the Super Bowl? I'm not really certain that they will or that they would, but where's the NFC North pride? I mean, it wasn't long ago that Lovie Smith, he was on the hot seat, and questions were in the air in Green Bay with injury and after injury. Ryan Grant went down. So many other people were hurt and injured. Just, I don't know. Just a question I'm throwing out there. Maybe we'll hear back from our listeners. If you're a Bears fan or if you're a Packers fan, could you pull for the other team and support your own division in the Super Bowl? Or is that just a strictly college rule? Or is that something that's in other divisions that's okay, but not in the NFC North, not in the Packers and the Bears? What a lot of people are talking about in this game is Jay Cutler's quarterback play. And don't worry, we'll talk about that. We'll get there. My question is, I'll pose a toss-up to you. What's the bigger problem? Is Jay Cutler the problem? Or is the lack of any receiving game that the Bears have the bigger problem? Johnny Knox is a good receiver, and he can be good later on in the future. But he's not the man right now. You can't ask a second-year guy to be the number one threat. Look, if the Bears want to be a force, if they want to be somebody that people are worried about, that they really fear, it's not just going to be because of the defense. They need to have some offensive threats too. Look, Matt Forte is a good running back. He's approaching a top-tier running back status, top half the league year in and year out. He's the next Marshall Faulk. I've gone on record as saying that. People who watch the game with me heard me say it as well. He's got the capability to make plays out of the backfield in the passing game, a la Marshall Faulk, Brian Westbrook. He's a good running back, can develop more between the tackles, but maybe that's more of an issue with offensive line. But there's no real receiving threat. Now, I'm not saying they need to go out and get Randy Moss, though that couldn't hurt. But they need to get some talent somewhere, either in free agency or hopefully draft somebody that can be that big threat, but there's not where they're going to be picking. I'm just not sure what's the bigger problem. Now, you can rag on Jay Cutler if you want to as being the Bears' problem. I've said it before. I've said that he's not the answer in Chicago. And if you look at Chicago's quarterbacks, they've never had a big-name quarterback. Look at their last quarterbacks. I mean, they had Jay Cutler, Kyle Orton, Rex Grossman, Craig Krenzel, Rex Grossman again. No upper-tier elite quarterback. And that's what it takes to win in this league. Look at the teams that are playing in the Super Bowl. Aaron Rodgers is right there on the cusp of being that kind of quarterback. Ben Roethlisberger is not pretty about it, but he wins. Like we talked about the AFC of those three teams, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, elite quarterbacks. Drew Brees won last year, elite quarterback. The Bears just don't have that with Jay Cutler. He was 6 of 14 in the first half. Apparently, he could not play in the second half due to an MCL tear. My issue is not with is he really hurt that bad or not. I do take issue with the fact that apparently he was crying after the game about how people were talking about him. Look, crying in football is reserved for when you have a career-ending injury, when you win the Super Bowl and it's the last game you'll ever play, or when you lose the Super Bowl. No other times that I can really think of. But his appearance on the sideline, I mean, I understand he's pretty laid back and nothing really phases him, or so it seems. He didn't ever look excited. He never looks excited. He looks monotone. But act like you're disappointed at least a little bit. Here's the other question. Why was Todd Collins the second string quarterback? Why did they even play him? It's not like they didn't know what they had there. Obviously, he's not that great. He had an 8.1 and a 6.2 quarterback rating in his two other games this season when Jay Cutler was hurt, when he filled in against the Giants and started against the Panthers, and inevitably they pulled him in that game too. So why did they even go to him in the first place in this game? Caleb Haney came in. He's a third-year man out of Colorado State, a little bit of Mountain West love. And he didn't look too bad. I mean, he obviously looked scared. But he made some plays. He did decent. I was impressed with his performance. And I'm not sure that he has a future riding on this. I'm not sure that he's got a big future for the Bears or anywhere else. But he could be their backup. There was no reason that Todd Collins would have even came in. No reason whatsoever. And in the NFL, once you go to the third-string quarterback, you can't go back to the first guy or the second guy. So that means if something happened to Caleb Haney, Matt Forte was listed as the emergency quarterback and Earl Bennett behind him. They would have been the quarterbacks. Now, if you take Matt Forte and move him to quarterback, who else is going to run the ball? And is he really going to be that effective throwing? I mean, let's just be real a little bit. The sports world has been changed in so many ways over the recent years with technology. With Twitter, everybody can be right in the minds of all these athletes and all these famous people, where they can hear what they're thinking and they can read it for themselves. You know, before it was you were at the mercy of whoever the interviewer was and what they asked. Now with Twitter, people can just come right out and say what they wanted to, and so many people have done that, coming out and just lashing out at Jay Cutler. Look, I mean, if I were in the NFC Championship game, it wouldn't be a question of planting. It would be a question of, is my leg still there? Not, can I plant to throw the ball? If my leg's there, I'd be playing. But that's just me. I'm not going to say he's not tough or whatever. That's not his call. Apparently, it was the medical staff made the call, made the determination that he would not play. But so many people went out and publicly criticized him for this. Maurice Jones-Drew's played on it, on a bad knee all year long. And he came out and publicly just nearly berated him. He called it the Urban Meyer move, that when the tough gets going, quit. Now, for people in the Jacksonville area are predominantly Florida fans, and I'm sure that won't go over well with his fan base, but he did play all season long, and he had a good season with two bad knees. My favorite, though, belongs to Bruce Gradkowski. He's a backup quarterback for the Raiders. Dude, before you come criticizing Jay Cutler in the NFC Championship game, elevate your status a little bit. I mean, it's one thing for a Hall of Famer to come out like Mike Ditka or some of these other, Deion Sanders, to say something about Jay Cutler. You're a backup quarterback for the Raiders. And yeah, you said you played with two MCL tears, sprains, whatever, in college. Who cares? You're a backup quarterback for the Raiders. You barely started over Jamarcus Russell, who might be the biggest flop in history. That's actually a good poll question for later on. Who's a bigger flop, Ryan Leaf or Jamarcus Russell? Regardless, it kind of makes you wonder where sports would have been 10 years ago with the if Twitter had been around there. What would people have said then? Maybe not even 10 years ago, but just 5 years ago. I wonder what the reaction would have been like between Yankees and Red Sox players when those Red Sox baseball players came back and beat the Yankees in that ALCS down 3-0. Just kind of makes you wonder, and we'll see how it plays out in sports in the future. Let's look at the Jets and the Steelers in the night game. The Jets went to Pittsburgh, went down early, got a field goal right before the half, then came storming back. Here's the question, what was the bigger deal, the Jets comeback or the Steelers meltdown? Was it a meltdown? How will the Steelers react from it, recover from it, and head into the Super Bowl? My biggest problem with this game, with the NFL as a whole, and in this game in particular, is where is the run? I mean, the Jets run the ball more than any other team, partly because they have a young quarterback, partly because they have two great running backs, and they have a good defense. But when you get down on the goal line, I've been of the mind that when you're inside the five and it's first and goal, if you can't punch it in and get a touchdown, you don't deserve to have the touchdown anyway. I hate when all these teams, it's first and goal at the one or the two, and they pass three times. If you can't punch it in, you don't deserve to have the points. Where was the Jets? What were they trying to do here? They've got the backs. They've got the line. Why couldn't they punch it in? Why abandon what's worked for you all year long? You see, you get in the playoffs and people start trying to do things that aren't with that don't go with their team identity. They start trying to do things that are not their style, and obviously didn't pan out here for the Jets. They end up losing to the Steelers. Mark Sanchez played well. And Ben Roethlisberger, you know, he doesn't have big numbers, but I'll tell you what, he wins games. He's got the best winning percentage in playoffs of active quarterbacks, and second only to Bart Starr all time. Not bad company, if I do say so myself. We'll see how it plays out when the Packers head out to Dallas. You know, the Packers haven't won in Dallas since 1989. They're 0-9 since then in Dallas, including playoffs. Wonder if that's a factor. And the last time the Packers played the Steelers, late in the season in 2009, it was actually a 35-36 shootout. The Steelers won. Ben Roethlisberger threw for over 500 yards. Aaron Rodgers almost 400. The combined passing yards, about 800 and some odd, was actually third most passing yards all time in a game. Maybe we'll be in for that again. But I think the Steelers will give them a heavy dose of Rashard Mendenhall if the Packers can't get a running game going. I think the Steelers' defense can eat them alive. But we'll save that speculation for next week as we draw closer and nearer to Super Bowl Sunday. Let's talk a little bit about what else is going on in the NFL. How about Carson Palmer?
I may be wrong, but I doubt it.
I talked about this earlier on the podcast. I thought Carson Palmer was done in Cincinnati. I thought he might be done altogether, and that's exactly what he's saying. He's demanding a trade, or he's threatening retirement. Look, I have no problem with players demanding trades and saying they want out. No problem with it whatsoever. I think sometimes players need a breath of fresh air. Carson Palmer may just be that guy in Cincinnati. I think he's had enough of, it's been a debacle there. It's been a circus. The ups and the downs. He's in a tough division with the Steelers and Ravens. I think he just needs a new chance. And I'm sure there are plenty of teams that would come calling for him, too. I mean, we'll get into that in a second, but be real. Who couldn't use a Carson Palmer, at least on a one-year basis? Especially with the quarterbacks coming out this year not looking as promising as once thought, with Andrew Luck not joining the mix. But apparently the Bengals are going to say no. They're going to tell him no. Now, I feel like players, you sign a contract and you have to abide by that contract, just like you expect the owners to abide to their end of the contract. If the owner just decided not to pay you, you would have problems. If you decide not to play, I've got problems. He's threatening retirement, and we could see a whole other Brett Favre debacle. Yeah, the Bengals will have the rights to him. Maybe they can get something for him. I think he still has some good left in him. A couple good years. He'll be 32 next year. I think he's still probably got a couple of good years left in him, but he needs to land in a place that's got some offensive threats where he can be a contender, maybe not right away, but pretty quickly. He's due to make $11.5 million, $13.5 million, and $14.5 million with Cincinnati. I don't know why Cincinnati wouldn't be willing to give that up anyway. That's a huge amount of money to give to a guy that hasn't exactly panned out for you. And there are teams that would happily pick that up. I think the 49ers would. I mean, no, he's not a top 10 quarterback in the league right now. But tell me the 49ers wouldn't take that in a heartbeat. Swap Alex Smith for him. Or the Vikings. All right, we'll give you Travaris Jackson. And then they could move on from the Brett Favre ordeal. Try another guy that should be decent. How about the Carolina Panthers? It's not like Matt Moore's the answer, and they seemed very intent that Jimmy Clausen wasn't the answer, that they were going to take Andrew Luck. Why not take another Pac-10 guy in Carson Palmer? To pick up a defensive guy like Nick Fairley with the first pick, and you have extremely improved your offense, or your whole team, really, your offense and defense, in just what could be a matter of weeks. I think it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. It's been a relatively quiet ordeal in the media, not really being covered a whole lot. But then again, there's been actual games going on. People have other things to worry about. I'm curious to see where he ends up there. I think there's tons of teams that would take him in a heartbeat. Maybe Seattle. Maybe he could rejoin his old coach, Pete Carroll. Maybe they don't need to invest so much money in Matt Hasselbeck. Say, bring in a Carson Palmer, draft the guy this year. Grow him under Carson Palmer, give him a year or two, let Palmer go his way, and you've got a new quarterback. Because I'll tell you what, Hasselbeck, he's not going to play. He didn't play great this year. He's not going to play great next year, and I don't see him playing much more than one more year. Lots going on in the NFL. It'll be interesting to see what happens with the collective bargaining agreement. Typically, Roger Goodell gives his State of the Union address, and quote, mimicking the President's State of the Union address, except that his is around the time of the Super Bowl. We'll see what happens with the deal. I'm sure they can get something done if they really desire to. But we'll see who's gonna budge first. So here's the thing I don't understand. The owners want to say they're losing money. And if that's the case, that's fine. It doesn't look like it on TV. But if you're losing money, okay. But are the players asking for a lot? Yeah. Yeah, they are. Are the owners asking for a lot? Yes, they are too. But if you're losing so much money, why won't you open up the books and show them? You can't tell me you're losing money, but then not back it up with a little bit of evidence. As long as that's the case, I'm going to find myself siding with the players because you're not willing to substantiate your claims. You're just going to make a statement and then not back it up. Once again, just like with the players, you can't sign a guy to a contract and not expect him to perform. Don't tell me that everything is so going downhill, you're losing money, and yet you won't show me your books, you won't show me your stats. Just saying. Will we have a season next year? Hopefully so. We'll see. It could be longer than Labor Day. This could be the last football game for a very long time for the NFL. Let's talk about a couple other sports before we wrap it up for the day. If you did not watch the Fight for the Troops this Saturday on Spike TV, you truly missed out on an incredible event. Not only look, you don't have to be into the UFC. I get it. Some people don't like it. Not your thing. That's fine. I like it. I enjoy it. I love the competitive nature. I love seeing the guys go head-to-head. But what the UFC did was truly incredible. They hosted this event at Fort Hood, Texas, on the Army base, the largest base in the entire United States of all the military. Free for the troops. All the troops just come on in. Come check it out. Free. And then they raised money for veterans who have had traumatic brain injury, TBI as they call it. 2 years ago they did this and they raised over $4 million to start a traumatic brain injury center. This year I would be shocked if they didn't raise $10 million. $10 million probably. And I think that's awesome. First of all, there were great fights. The Pat Barry and Joey Beltran fight was incredible. They just went rock'em sock'em robot on each other. The Evan Dunham and Melvin Guillard fight was great, although I'm not sure what Melvin was talking about when he said his grandfather was a four-star brigadier general. I'm not sure why he referred to himself as the dark horse in the 155 division. That's clearly not the case, but okay. But that a sport would essentially give an event to the military and raise money for veteran issues, essentially trying to help with research and save lives. It was awesome to see. A lot of these fighters had military ties, brothers who are overseas. One of them did. It was just a great event. It was a good event to see. It leads to one of the poll questions. Which sport is the most patriotic? NBA, NHL, NFL, UFC, baseball, MLB. That's the question we posed to you at the blog. It's goodwithgary.blogspot.com. I think you can make a case for a lot of sports, but my question is, how much money could be raised for the troops and for medical research to help with wounded soldiers if each sport gave one game? One event. If there was one football game where only the military could come. Not saying that it has to be that way. I mean, I may be biased a bit because I'm in the military here. But what if each sport did something like that? Put on, I know the NFL sends guys over and they overseas. They play with the guys, and that's awesome. That's incredible, and that's great. But it's a totally different thing when you offer an event that's totally devoted the way that the Fight for the Troops was. I know that they had planned for Kenny Florian to fight. I think it would have been awesome for bigger names to get in there, and I'm sure that in the coming years it will turn into that. But here's a thank you to the UFC and to Dana White for putting on that kind of a show. The Tampa Bay Rays recently signed former Red Sox players Johnny Damon and Manny Ramirez. I think that was a good move on their part to sign Johnny Damon. I think he has the potential to have a couple good years left in him. But Manny Ramirez, not really sure. I mean, yeah, look, he showed it with the White Sox. People are still afraid to pitch to him. But he's just not worth the hassle, and that's not really been modus operandi, the MO for the Rays rather, over the last few years. It's like they're going back to the old days when they brought in Canseco and the other guys. We'll see how that plays out for them this year. Not sure that they're going to be real contenders in the AL East this year. Here's our couple of other poll questions for you. Check out the blog at www.itsgoodwithgary.blogspot.com and vote. Would you be surprised to see Brett Favre play in the NFL again? A lot of people say no. I would not be completely shocked. All it takes is one team to be a few games out next year. Week 10, quarterback goes down. They were in their a game up in their division. Come knocking on his door. Hey, finish out the season. You've only got to play 2 months. Would not be shocked myself. We'd like to hear your vote. How about this? If you're going to a college and your plan is to make it to the NFL, which college would you go to? Ohio State, USC, Alabama, Texas, Florida, Oklahoma. Which college would you go to best get you ready or best help your chances of making it to the NFL? Which sport is the most patriotic, and several other polls. Also coming up on the blog, first of all, we've added a few contributing authors that will be joining Albert Espinoza, Braden Gross, Doug Shockey will each be adding periodically to the blog. A couple of interesting tidbits. The 2010, the year of the sport, from one person's perspective as he went to so many different sporting events. Another guy's going to add in his football thoughts on the weekends. Albert Espinoza is going to look into how training it's a UFC article, but how training camps, when you change training camps, is it a good thing and then it broadens your experience, or is it a bad thing because there's a lack of consistency? He's going to look into what their records were, fighters who did that, changed camps after a couple fights or after a certain amount of time. I think it'll be real interesting to look at and see what he comes up with. You can also look for an article coming up about the impact the new coaching staff will have at Florida with recruiting, with the way the game is played in the SEC, what to expect in the future. Make sure you follow us on the blog. Check us out each day. Polls are updated frequently. New articles are added almost every day. Check us out on iTunes. Search It's Good with Gary. You can find it right there. We're also on Twitter at It's Good with Gary, and we'll let you know whenever stuff comes out there as well. And you can expect that there will probably be some Twitter interviews coming soon as well. Thank you for joining in on this podcast. Thanks for hanging out with us. We'll be back either later in the week or the beginning of next week with some Super Bowl predictions. We'll try and bring on some guests, potentially some former NFL players and other football insiders as we get ready for the Super Bowl. We'll hear your predictions. This poll is going up on the blog as well. Who do you think will win in Super Bowl 45, the Packers or the Steelers? Let your voice be heard. This is your chance to compete with the mothership, ESPN. Let GSPN become the new favorite. Thanks for joining us. Gary Smith signing off. Y'all have a good one. Here's also a quick shout out to one of my loyal listeners, longtime listener, Brett Killian. Just want to give you a quick thank you for listening to the podcast. Keep following us and keep voting. Stay in touch, big guy. If you're listening, let me know. Forever. I will. I will. Let me down.